This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey babes, it's Lala Kent.
With Ren, we are back. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
And to those of you who drank, happy motherfucking hump day. I hope you get lit for me.
There you go.
Because it's been one hell of a week so far. Randall knows why.
Yes, it has been a week. You're not going to bring this up.
I mean, Monday we shot the main titles for Vanderpump Rules.
Correction. You shot.
Well, hold up. Not really. So Randall had asked me if it was a cool idea if he did main titles. Now, keep in mind, it wasn't
they asked me.
Correct. Okay. And then you came to me and said, like, what do you think?
Right.
It wasn't, I originally thought it was like they were going to give Randall a title card, you know, where he'd be like spilling drinks in the opening credits.
Which we said no. That was definitely never going to happen.
That cannot happen. But come to find out, it was like just the main shot, like the group shot where it's like Vanderpump Rules.
Here we are. And there's like 20 people.
Right. So you did it.
Well, hold on. Let's go through the process. I was having a meltdown because I was like, this is a lot. And then you and everybody else who we talked to thought, oh my God, it'd be fun to be next to you, blah, 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 blah. So I got the courage up to accept the kind invitation.
Correct.
I didn't know what it really meant because I've never been in part of anything like that. And so I went to the Sir restaurant with you.
Correct.
Walked in and everything was like tented. So it didn't look like Sir, like when you go there and have cocktails or.
No, it was like a set.
It was like a set.
Totally.
There were TV cameras. There were still cameras. There was makeup and hair. It was a big production. I didn't know what I was walking into. I think if I knew that, I'd probably.
Oh, you thought we were just some like mom and pop show?
Yeah, well, I don't think that. I think that I
you didn't expect there to be like real cameras.
I didn't think there'd be like a crew of 35 people. I mean, it was big. And I walked in. And I was like, if I knew it was loud, I probably would have just stayed home. But I thought I'd just come in and be like a still camera. We just knock out a shot and go home. So right away, I walk into. You walk into hair and makeup, and then the guy was very nice. I don't know his name. He's like, just sit here, Rand. And I was like, oh, okay, thank you for giving me a seat. But I didn't know that meant I'm going to get hair and makeup, because that's right. What he meant. So then he just starts caking stuff on my face, and I'm like shell shocked. And then we sit there together. And anyway, the next thing I know is then we're lining up for a photo. And all I'm saying to myself is this is like a bar mitzvah photo. That's what I try to think of it as, my bar mitzvah photo. And I was like, this is my bar mitzvah photo. These are my family and friends
watching.
And the director is like moving everybody around. And I'm just like, this is brutal. But it was really neat to see your world, like how big it is. I mean, it's much bigger than I think people realize. Like,
I think it's much bigger than you realize, because if you remember, it wasn't too long ago. By the way, we have my fiance's best friend of 100 million years, Mike Burns here. Hi, Mikey. He's just patiently waiting.
Yeah, we didn't sell people, but we have Mike Burns, the director of your movie.
Out of Death, yes.
And
but he's looking like he wants to chime in about how his friend, look at him, he's shaking his head. Okay, back to.
No, he's coming in the next segment.
It wasn't long ago
that
Randall, I would be like doing the show.
Yep.
And Randall would blow me up. Like, what are you doing? It's like, I know you think
like
that
the first year I had no clue.
You had no idea. Clue. You know, it's like so yesterday and throughout the season, he's seen like, oh, these people, like, they're like living their
real lives.
And she's actually busy doing that. And yesterday, how long did that main picture take?
Oh, my. We arrived at 4:45 and we didn't leave till 9 o'clock. That was intense. And by the way. For the last 3 or 4 years, I know now the deal. But the first year, I was like, oh, you're going to film? And I thought that'd be like an hour. And you'd come back like 11 hours later. It's like, it's your real life. They follow you everywhere you go. They do all these things. It's pretty intense. I give everybody on this show and all reality shows, after seeing a little taste of it, a lot of my hats off to you, because it's long days and, you know, you guys are really good at what you do. I mean,
we must have been standing there for 3 hours straight, just trying to get everybody's facial expression perfect, their movement, their setup. I probably got on and off the same chair 14 times to lift it with boxes before they were like, can you, everyone's now perfect. Lala, can you somehow try to get off the chair again and just stand?
Oh my God. It just didn't stop.
It's a grueling day.
It's long. And by the way, and then
you
after,
just thought you were going to roll in there, get the shot and dip.
No, they told me this would be a quick thing.
No.
And then after we did this one big group photo, I got to leave and you then had to go do your like slow motion little
the solos
thing. And that, you didn't even get home till...
My call time was 4:45.
You didn't get home till 1.
1 in the morning.
That's enough for one shot. I mean, I got to say, it is an art. The show is awesome. It's really cool to watch.
Well, all the people that are creating the main titles are geniuses. And, like, they look at every little detail, you know?
And then we had to keep our eyes open. They kept saying we had to close our eyes and open them
they
and
have
hold them for 5 seconds.
They have full fan directly in your face. And they're like, keep the eyes open, keep the eyes open. They're just, like, burning your eyeballs to a crisp.
I am petrified to see this because I am by no means like you guys as models and you know...
We're all basically like retired actors, model actors.
Yeah, and I'm a middle-aged person who looks like your grandfather in this picture. So there you go.
Maybe my dad, not my grandfather. Definitely you could be my dad, though.
Okay, thank you. So anyway, it was really neat to be part of it. I really never thought, they asked me, did you ever think you would be here? And I said, absolutely not. But Lala is very persuasive and very opinionated, and so therefore, somehow I ended up there. So it was neat to see you guys do what you do, and I'm always taking my hat off. A show that's been on, I say this, I say it to Lisa, I say it to all the cast. You guys have been on the air for 9 years. That is a huge accomplishment in television, whether it's scripted or unscripted. It's a hit show. My hat's off to everybody, and congratulations on another season. And I can't wait to see you and hopefully not a lot of me, but there you go. Okay, moving on.
I love it. There was a time that Randall was like, I will not do the show unless it equals out to be, you know, like X amount of dollars.
But you,
right?
But you remember.
And now here he is.
No, hold on. Time backwards. You know that I said that because you know and I know that we had that conversation when we got together that I was never going to appear on the show.
Right.
And then you, about 3 years in, were like, babe, will you just show up a few times? Just because I have to show my real life and you're part of it.
Right. Well, like I can only be a girl in her late 20s taking her top off for so long before it's like, we need to show like what my life is really like. Like I have someone at home. It's like,
right.
And so you do me a solid.
And you were really smart because you said to me, we'll just go with Jack and Brittany to dinner. We'll just go to the wedding. You get, you know, Lisa Vanderpump is smart. She's like, darling. So my point is that. Somehow you guys got in my head, told me it'd be 3 or 4 times that I have to appear. And now
you were great though, Rand. You added like such a lighthearted aspect to the show, you know?
I'm just going to say that I never thought, you know, you guys made it fun for me. And the few times that I do, you know, come on with you, it's always kind of been a fun setting. So that made it easy for me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm excited and congratulations on another season.
Thank
of Vanderpump Rules.
In sadder news, still Bravo related, obviously, because I don't know anything else besides Bravo. Literally.
Oh, this is sad news for you.
BravoCon has officially been canceled for 2021.
Which is crazy.
I know. And can I tell you?
Sucks.
It does suck, but I was talking to Sheena and we were both freaking out about number one, leaving our babies behind for 4 days. And two, we both are still breastfeeding and to have to pump regularly and also not feel, you know, never in my life have I ever thought that the saying don't cry over spilled milk. It could not be less true.
Well, I also think...
Don't cry over... I'm going to cry over spilled milk. So if I'm pumping in New York for BravoCon, I need to save that shit. So that was a whole thing between Shana and I. Like, how are we going to save this? How are we going to package it and get it back home? And then I was thinking about it. Like, thank you, Bravo, for keeping us all safe. You know?
By the way, and that's what I wanted to say is that obviously, BravoCon is such a big fan-friendly event. I mean, I went the first year to support you, and everybody's wants to mingle and talk. And
right.
And clearly, we can't have that right now with COVID and the Delta variant.
Yeah.
So, you know, my hat's off again to NBC, Universal, and Bravo, because it wouldn't have been safe. And I think this was the right call. And so at the end of the day, there will be BravoCon again.
Right.
And we just have to wait till next year.
Yeah, no, I was definitely happy that their focus was to keep us safe. And, you know, we went to World Dog Day this weekend. And I, even though it was outside, like, you get a little nervous. I have a baby at home. Other people have babies at home. Like, we all have families. And there were people that would come up and ask if they could hug me. And I was straight up. And I'm usually never like this.
No, you're always like, you're a hugger.
I'm a hugger. And I'm usually, even if I don't want to, like, I'll still do it. And World Dog Day was the first day,
yeah,
first time ever that I was like, no, I'm sorry.
But right now, it's a scary time again. And it's been a scary time. And we thought for a minute, you know, like with the vaccine, that, you know, things were really had turned, and now here we are again, you know, in a really scary time again. So we just all have to do what we have to do to stay safe, keep everybody safe. And I'm just praying for the best for everybody, because, you know, it's a really odd couple years that we're all living in. So anyway, I'm excited because today we're going to cut the break. But I just want to say our next guest is Mike Burns, Michael Burns, who I grew up with in Miami. We'll talk about how he and I found our love for film together, and the irony. We have a story to tell, and we'll tell it when he comes on, about the irony of fate. And I do believe in fate, and I do believe that fate has a big role in our lives. At least that's what I believe, and he does too. And we'll talk about fate, how we started in movies together, and what happened this year for both of us, and the odds of that. But on top of that, he directed you in your last movie, Out of Death. That was his first movie.
Thank God it was him, because I was hormonally... like, it was bad.
See, I wasn't there, but are you going to let him be open to tell us about
your... Yes, I am totally open.
This is going to be going, all right, let's cut the break. We'll come right back with Mike Burns.
So I have two game changers to share with you when it comes to upping your glam game. I am totally obsessed with Impress No Glue Manis and Impress Press-On False Eyelashes, because I'm very into just easy right now. And anyone can do it. You are going to love them just as much as I do. Both require zero glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes. There's also no annoying dry time. And the best part, zero mess. One step and you're done. The lash style options are endless, and there are so many on-trend nails to choose from. Impress, No Glue Manis, and Press-On Falsies are the easiest and fastest way to upgrade your look in just minutes. The Press-On Falsies have a unique under-lash application for a totally seamless look and are made with an exclusive self-stick technology that keeps them secure for up to 24 hours. The Impress Manis have a patented super hold adhesive for up to 7 days secure hold, and that's perfect for all of you busy mamas out there who don't have a lot of time to spend on glam but want to look your best. I completely get it. Impress No Glue Manis and Impress No Glue Press-On Falsies are absolutely a beauty must. You need to try them right now, so get yours today at impressbeauty.com/Lala. And use code LALA at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies. That's impressbeauty.com/LALA and use code LALA at checkout for 25% off. Here's what I love about doing a podcast. It doesn't really require any glam, like, at all. I can podcast in comfort, and for me, that means wearing my new favorite, super soft Quince cashmere tee. Thanks to Quince, I've got a lineup of timeless, comfortable pieces that keep me looking so chic summer after summer. Quince has premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at $30. You can find silk tops, 14-karat jewelry, and so much more. And this is my favorite part. All Quince items are 50 to 80% less than many similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes all of those savings on to us. And don't get me started on their towels. I have the Quince waffle towels at the Palm Springs house. I have them in white, and they are so soft. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Lala for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Lala to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Lala.
And we are back. Okay, before we bring Mikey on, I just have to share what happened a couple days ago that like shook me to my core. I had always wondered what it would be like the first time you see your child bleeding and you don't know where it's coming from, because I've seen this on TV, like Real Housewives of OC. This woman that did one season, like her kid's hand was bleeding and she was like, where is it coming from? Like the blood's everywhere, like
freaking
whatever.
Freaking out.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't imagine. So I take Ocean to Jackson Brittany's house and she's standing. I even posted it on Graham. She's standing on like her little plaything. It stands you up, but she can't reach the bottom so that she can move around. So we added books underneath for her to be able to touch. So whatever, I go over, I pick her up. I'm holding her feet, and my hand is wet, and there's blood all over my hand.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I just started freaking out. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, my baby's bleeding. I like rush her to the sink. I'm putting her feet under the water. And then I see that she has all of these tiny little paper cuts all over her feet.
From the books.
And I just started sobbing. She didn't make a peep. She did not make one peep about it, which made me feel even worse. So that I officially experienced my first time with Ocean having a boo-boo that was bleeding.
Yeah, that's scary. That's scary. That moment is definitely a moment you'll remember forever, because it's like,
Speaking of, I need to write it in her book. I forgot. Oh, wait, I didn't forget. I did write it in the book.
Okay.
I did.
Well, I mean, I'm glad it was, I mean, I'm not
but
glad.
But then the day was great. The day ended up being great.
Yeah, that was a heavy subject, heavy moment there, but you know what?
I mean, I feel like moms that listen to the podcast can relate, though.
By the way, it's mostly moms and women are demographic, so I think they will enjoy that story.
Yeah, they'll understand. All right, on to lighter topics.
Let's pivot. So let's bring out Mike Burns. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Hey. Hi, was Mikey. That story was a hard act to follow.
Okay, so Mike, so let's talk about a couple things. So you and I, we grew up together. Tell people kind of our story from your perspective, like where we grew up in, you know, a Cliff Note version of just us and how we fell in love with movies together and went to college together and things like that.
Well, it started when you crashed my fourth grade birthday party.
Because I wasn't invited.
You crashed it?
He had a jumpy house.
So here's a sixth grader jumping in a jumpy house with a bunch of fourth graders.
Sounds about right. Right, Law? Sounds about right now.
And nothing's changed.
Pretty much. Same. And he held that against me till he was 13 when he had his bar mitzvah. He purposely didn't invite me because he was still so angry about that. So I didn't get to go to the bar mitzvah.
I don't think
And I'm still a little angry about that myself.
Grudge holder you are.
I don't think that
we just weren't that close friends.
We weren't close.
I just happened to have a bouncy castle and that was all he needed.
Wanted in.
Yeah, he wanted in. That was it.
Yeah. And the truth is I did not intentionally not invite my bar mitzvah. My parents controlled the list because I was 12 years old, turning 13.
That's
Let's
true.
Leave it at that. So That's Leslie true. And Ethan, yeah. you blocked my best childhood friend. You're welcome.
So then when
but
did
we
you guys become?
But we weren't. No.
It wasn't until we were 15, 16.
No, that was 13 and you were 15.
15, 16. Yeah. I'm saying when I was in high school,
yeah.
when we started making films together. So let's.
Yeah,
let's,
we pretty much met in junior high. Met, but like we started to hang.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because his sister would go to school together and commute and do all this stuff. And they were in the same theater classes.
Your sister.
Like
your
sister. Yeah, my sister. Yeah.
Yeah. His sister and I were in the same class, went to New World School of the Arts, or Performing Arts High School.
And your sister is on Broadway.
Correct.
Yeah, she's a musical theater actress, and she does a lot of Broadway
stuff.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. Andrea Burns, yeah.
Yeah, very talented. By the way, she was offered record deals at like 9 years old. She had like the sickest voice. So Gloria Estefan, all types of people were trying to sign her at like 9, 10, 11 years old. It was nuts.
Okay, so you guys met basically 13, 15 is when you became friends. And did you share the love of creating films? Is that what kind of put you guys together?
We were both, my sister was acting and Brandy was acting and I started acting. And junior high was the first place you could start taking drama classes. So we all kind of were in the mix there. But my dad had bought a camera, a video camera. So
with the cord that went to the VHS machine.
It was like the one machine that had all the tapes in it. The other one was a big ass battery pack that you'd have to carry.
You could only go like 20 feet either way. Yeah. I mean, it was like crazy.
Yeah, and I could only, I mean, there was like 45 pounds that you had to carry around.
And we had to film each other, like being in the movie. So like
Mike would be the cameraman. Only had two of us, so there was nobody else. And my sister would act.
Her sister would play like the girlfriend, like that broke my heart at the Christmas.
But we had a tripod, so we did do scenes together, and we did some fun stuff, and we were just like having fun, just making videos. And
but we did. I mean, we found the tapes, the lost tapes.
We do. We have the lost
Mike
tapes.
Mike found them, and we converted them to DVD. So we have.
Okay,
the films.
Where do we watch them? No, you have to. Mike, can you take them and put them so that we can put them on social media?
Yeah. Oh my God. But I don't know if they're going to be a good fit for your social. People are going to be like, what the fuck is this?
No, we're going to put them on Randall's social.
Oh, Randall's? Obviously. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, we can do that.
Listen, here's the summary. We made probably 20, 30, 40 music videos, commercials, short films, like anything we could just come up. We would borrow the car in the neighborhood, have the parent come and drive it, roll it up back and forth, like production value.
So adorable.
We love movies too. We actually got dressed up to go see Wall Street in like suits.
With glasses, with the ties, with everything.
We
didn't have a lot of friends. We're going to be honest.
I can't imagine why.
This is the 80s. And
no, it had nothing to do with that. No, we just didn't have a lot of friends. We were
artists. Did you go to New World too?
Yes.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
So we both went.
He didn't finish.
Well, it's not like he didn't finish Harvard. He didn't finish New World. Who gives a damn?
He didn't finish a lot of schools he started. But
anyway, that's fine. Look at him now.
Thriving. Okay, listen. So here's what happened, babe. We made like 40 short films. And then what happened was
he left me to go to college and I was all alone.
No, he was really talented with editing. So what happened is we created the story kind of together. We directed it kind of together. We started it, and then I would go home, and all night he'd stay up and edit these things, which in the old days, you had to kind of cut.
Two tape machines.
It was horrible.
Pause and all that stuff, yeah.
So he made these films into really cool, and it was really fun, and then I went off to film school. He then came to the same film school in New York, and we stayed
Didn't
our
finish
friendship.
That one either.
That's okay. You know, so it's not for everybody.
I have a problem with authority figures.
That's an understatement.
You don't like being told what to do?
No, that's why. That's why he's a director.
Oh, so he holds all. Yeah, speaking of being a director, you made your directorial debut with the film Out of Death that I was in. Lucky you.
Let's pause there. So Lala was 6 months pregnant.
Five
months pregnant when she left to go to Puerto Rico to do a movie. And now here's the thing. The movie had it started on time and wrapped on time, not due to a COVID event. You would have been in and out in just a couple weeks.
Right.
But because it got shut down for COVID.
I was there for a month.
So here's the thing. I'm at home. I'm working in the office, you know, getting ready for the next movie. I'm preparing. And Lala's calling me in isolation in her hotel room. It's not funny. It was serious at the time.
Right. But now looking back, everyone's healthy and safe. We can laugh about it.
Yes. And by the way, they were false positives. So it wasn't even a real COVID event in this particular situation. Yeah. But Lala's calling me saying, I'm going to get on a fucking plane. I'm coming home.
I was like, I'm aborting this mission. Okay, so the film starts.
No. What happened was is that this movie was supposed to go in April.
Yes.
And that's just, you were like 1 month pregnant or something like that at that point.
No.
Yeah, you weren't even pregnant.
June, you found out you're pregnant.
We found out we were pregnant in July. So if it was supposed to go in the April
right
before.
After midnight.
You weren't pregnant. That's correct.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, so there were a lot of push start dates. There were a lot of issues. COVID-related events, you know, that...
They treat false positives the same as a positive.
Right,
so they don't care if it comes back.
Right, so when we get a false positive, we have to shut the movie down and we have to retest and we have to trace and do all these things. And in the end, nobody had COVID in this situation, but it still pushed the movie back 2 weeks. So now, Lala gets on set. This is the part I like to hear.
So as I'm waiting, I'm becoming progressively more hormonally angry. Yeah.
Mike, tell us from your perspective how Lala was on some days on her, especially.
I don't want you to hold back.
Oh, wow. This is going to be good because I haven't even heard this.
No, I mean, I think we had a couple of, you know, moments, I'd say.
No, give us that. Be specific. I want to hear what that means as a director. What is a specific moment?
Well, no, I mean, I'd say, you know, we were, when, the first one I think was when we were, when I was trying to get a couple rehearsals in early on. We were trying to block out some stuff. I was trying to do some blocking, and Lala had some opinions about doing blocking before.
Give us her opinions. What were they?
She said, I don't really know why. She said, I don't know why we're doing blocking right now. We should be doing that on set. I've never had to do blocking in front
Lala,
of
what you call it.
We were in a ballroom.
Lala, but that's part of rehearsing. What do you mean?
I don't think we need to rehearse like that. Put me on set, show me from point A to point B, and I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you what, that day though, we did get on set and do that scene. Because we blocked it, I was like, you know, you guys know what to do. Remember, we're here, and we moved past it. So it did help.
Oh, by the way, I never would have been, like, I would have never, had I not been so angry just and hormonal, I would have been like, fuck it, let's do a million rehearsals in the ballroom.
Well, remember, you were also in pain. So you were dealing with the sciatic.
I had the sciatic.
Yeah, was pinched. So that was, it's hard to do anything when you're in pain.
I love that Mike is being so friendly, because if I were in his place, I would say you were a nightmare and you were so
But hold on. But first of all, you've done a lot of movies. I know a lot of the producers you've worked with and directors that you've done since, you know, in the last 5 years. And every single director and every single producer gives you rave reviews. So I knew, and Mike's smart.
And I was a fan.
He has
too,
a child.
I was already a fan of yours from, you know, The Row 2. I thought you did a great job. That was the first time I actually seen you do a floral lead, kind of leading type of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought you were great. So for me, it was just like, let's just have fun with this. And I know you're going to do really well. The pressure cooker, the timing, the switch.
Because she would call me, you call me and say, you know, like, I just should be home right now. I should be home, you know, nesting and getting ready. But the thing was, you know, you're the kind of person, Law, when you commit to something, you never back out. So I know you. You know, you're somebody who wants to finish and see it through, and you didn't want to let anybody down. It was, unfortunately, the movie got pushed so many times that it just ran into your pregnancy.
The sciatic nerve did not add. But I'm so grateful that it was Mike as the director, because if it would have been someone else.
It was like family.
It was like family. And I felt really.
Which is a double-edged sword, because then you can kind of, you know, you yell at your brother. And yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like, exactly.
It's a little bit of a double-edged sword, but I will say that it was hard. Listen, she had to do a lot of physical stuff.
Yeah.
And she had to like lay down on the grass for like two, you know, in a weird position for and pretend she's dead for like a half an hour while another guy's doing a scene that she's not even really, she's just in the background. So it was a lot. There was a lot of things there that were, you know, a little, you know, tricky and, you know, there was a lot of pressure. And I think that, you know, you did your best to keep it together and I think that, you know, because you were pregnant, because of you having the pain, I gave you a hall pass on that one.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike.
And I still think you crushed it. I think you did a great job.
Too.
And everybody loves you in the movie.
People really like the movie. So Mike keeps saying that he wants me to watch it. I haven't ever watched a movie that I have been a part of. I watched The Row.
Because you went to the premiere.
You had to. You were sitting in the premiere of the movie theater
right.
at The Row. Yeah.
So, that was
and then
situation.
it kind of ended there. I don't
You've been in like
enjoy
10 movies
it.
Since
it makes,
then.
Yeah, it makes me very uncomfortable because I critique myself. Like I could have done so much better. And then
a lot of actors.
It's not productive. It's not a productive thing.
Yeah, you couldn't have done any better than you did on this movie.
Okay, let me pivot.
And it hit number 6 on iTunes, which is great.
Four, but who's counting?
Four. Wow. See.
Yeah.
Okay. Hot second.
Yeah. Mine was number 3, and number 2. But hold on. Okay, so let's talk about this. So now Mike directs.
That's our story. Yeah.
Right. So now Mike directs Out of Death, and I direct Midnight in the Switchgrass. And here's the funny thing. So both of us are, I'm 50, he's almost 50. We both decide to go and direct our first features. I do mine and then get shut down in the pandemic, and then it takes a long time to remount it. You start yours after when I'm in post, and I'm actually shooting my next movie that I'm directing. But here's the irony of it all. We both grew up with a love of film. We both are passionate filmmakers. We both waited decades to make the decision that we're ready to direct. What are the chances?
Yeah.
What are the chances? This is the craziest thing. Mike brought this up to me, and at first I was like, whatever, man, it's kind of weird. But then I really think about it. What are the chances that we both have a movie come out?
One that started almost a year before
mine, because it got shut down. And then his, he did 9 months later, whatever. And then they both come out with two different studios. within 7 days of each other.
I'll tell you what
the chances are. And we're in the top 10 together.
And then we're competing for the spot.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what the chances are. The chances are very low.
It's one in a trillion.
Very low.
It's almost near impossible. Improbable. And then here's the crazy part. I remember when we're both on iTunes, my movie came out on Friday. He was already creeping up to the top five, and he was in at four at this moment. And then my came in at like number eight, and when we first launched, and then he starts dropping down because he's already been out and open. He's starting to go, and then
and I'm getting the daily, the minute by minute update.
Right,
I'm coming up. I'm coming for you.
I go from eight, I go to six, and then he goes to five, and I go, I'm close, but I don't know if we're ever going to get there because I have no idea.
Right,
and then he hits six, and I go to five, and I go. Screenshot right on the Instagram. Best friends. We made movies together.
You're so
petty. Of course, he waited until he got the five spot and I was down at the six.
Yeah. See how he did that? Such a random move.
And he goes, it's crazy when your best friend is number six and you're number five in the iTunes charts.
Like, no, you know what's crazier?
You're lucky I gave you a shout out. You're welcome.
Oh, a shout out.
Yeah. I give him a shout out. But then Midnight got to three and I was really excited. But here's the thing. I joke around with the competition, but the truth is we both started movies together. We both love film and we both waited.
We both diverged in our paths to do. You produced with this.
You
were acting and you were actually maybe considering directing when you went to film school.
No, I didn't. I never wanted anything to do with directing until I was maybe 10 years ago. I started thinking about it. I just never thought I would ever.
Me too.
And want to challenge myself.
I have a question for both of you. Now that you have both directed. Mike, what do you feel was one thing that you thought directing would be like that kind of shocked you that it wasn't that way?
What was the unexpected aspect of directing?
Yep.
I think a lot of directing that they don't teach you is, you know, how to deal with people and how to try to make sure that you're protecting your vision, but also respecting other people's artistic, freedom, really, so they can really kind of do what they do.
Randall.
I think when we were doing our stuff, and you know, I came into it with this like really sharp vision of what I wanted, which I think is good. But then you got to kind of throw it away and let people do what they do, and then later on in the post production process, you're like, you watch stuff and you're like, oh, okay, that kind of worked, and that was really cool. So I think that just being able to work with different personalities and different people who didn't need different things, right? Don't you think every actor is a little bit different?
Yeah.
Some actors really want to be told what to do and where to be and how to do, and other people are kind of the opposite. And there's just a lot of like different ways that methods that people use to be able to do their thing. And I you know, you don't know that until you go in and start working with people. Nobody teaches you that.
And correct me if this wasn't how it really was, but, you know, you're kind of, you know, the head of the entire production. So it's not even just the actors that you have to worry about and their, you know, creative mindset and, like you said, freedom. But you have other people on set that you're also in charge of. Was that kind of a shock that it was like, wow, I'm really running this entire show?
It was crazy. Actually, I have a video of myself that I did a little video diary, and I'm like, I'm sneaking away right now because I haven't had like 5 minutes to be able to just without somebody running up and saying a question. I said, I guarantee you the next 5 seconds somebody calls my name, and I literally 5 seconds later, Mike, where's Mike? Where's Mike?
Right.
So that was new to me, and having that, you're used to that because producing, I'm sure it's just nonstop.
I don't think so. I think it was a completely different experience for you, Rand, said.
I think that part of it wasn't as shocking that the
okay.
The,
so for you, same question. What was the unexpected for you that you maybe had a vision in your head of what directing consisted of, and how was it different?
I think for me was just the intensity of every minute. You know, like as a producer, I come on and I have to solve big problems, the major problems. You know, like, oh, we're over schedule, we lost a location, an actor's sick, whatever the big kind of big picture items, big ticket items.
Right.
Whereas a director, you're solving every little detail. And so for me, I just wasn't used to the constant every second. And here's the big takeaway. I went into directing just with an open mind, even though I've produced over 100 films and I've been on many sets. I went in not expecting anything. I just said, I don't know what this is going to be like. I might hate it. I might love it, but I don't know.
Right.
And obviously, you know, babe, as I told you, I called you, I was so excited about every part of it. But I think for me, the part that I wasn't ready for was as a producer, after 2 hours, if I'm ready to go to the hotel and go play pickleball.
You can leave.
I can leave. If I want to go, if I want to go back to LA and see my kids or see you, La, I get on the plane and I come. I say on Thursday, I'll be home. When you're 3 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks in and you're like, I'm fucking tired and I want to go home to my house and I want to, you know, or I want to go to the hotel.
Not an option. No.
So anyway, there was a day where I didn't feel well, where I only had a few hours of sleep and I was super fatigued and I was dehydrated and I went on set and you don't have a choice. You don't get to let people down
right
when you're in there. So I think that
you can't say like today I need to sleep in a little.
Yeah, because every minute counts on a movie set and every dollar means something. And after being a producer for so many years, I have such respect for that part of it that I wouldn't do that. And I remember this is the best moment I had not the best moment. This is the moment where the producer produced me for the first time in my career. Cause I do the producing and I produce directors. One of my producers, I was supposed to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning and I gotten up at 6, not feeling well. And he knocks on my door. He comes in and he's like, all right, you ready to go? And I was like, oh my God, they're sending somebody in to bring me because they know that I told them I don't feel well. Can we push it a couple hours? And he's like, come on, I got you a bagel. I got you orange juice. I got you some vitamins. I got you emergency. We're going, let's go. And I said, no, I don't feel great. He's like, no, it's great. You're going to go. We're going to set the shot. Then you're going to go in your trailer. You're going to rest for an hour. And then I'm bring you back out on set. We're going to keep going. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting produced. It's like what I've done.
Right.
And you know, cause you went, so it's just like those moments were so surreal for me because that's what I did for 20 plus years, you know, with other directors. And so I think that was new to me and not having that exit where I could just say, I'm tired and I've worked, you know, 22 days straight. I haven't had a day off and I want to just go sleep. There's no option for that. And so I think for me that was something. But then again, the adrenaline and the excitement and the high.
Once you get on set.
Oh, there's nothing like
it. You forget your fatigue.
Yeah, there's no magic that when you walk onto a set and you get to create, for me, with actors and talk about a scene and they challenge you. You know, actors will say, well, why? Why are you making this decision? I don't necessarily agree that my character would do it. And I like that part of it. I enjoy being pushed. And and that's a real artist, you know. Actors who are incredible they're incredible artists and they want to be challenged. They want to be pushed. They want answers. And if they don't believe what you're telling them,
right,
then you got to find a way to convince them that that is the right choice for that character. And if not, you got to be open to their choice. Mm-hmm. And does sometimes what they say, you know, when they give me ideas, I'm like, oh, that I didn't see that. You know, I'm open to that. Let's try it that way too. So I enjoy that collaborative process. I enjoy really, really creating, collaborating on an intimate level, right on set in the moment. And when the magic works, Mike, I mean, I think that there's no bigger high for me. You know, that's it. That's where I found that level. Reminded me when I first started producing films, you know, it was all brand new and
yeah,
and all that. So, yeah.
All right.
I'm
going
to throw this back to you now.
We got to take a quick break before we go to law.
I've never directed anything.
No, that's not true. You direct me every day. Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break and then you can interview Lala. We'll be right back.
I have been very transparent with you guys about my hair struggles between the pregnancy hormones and bleaching it all the time. I have been having some serious hair issues. And now with baby number 2 on the way, I'm already being proactive about my hair thanks to Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number 1 dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. And I am definitely one of those people. Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting the root causes of thinning, which are stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism. You can take the Nutrafol Hair Wellness Quiz on Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. Because I know we are all different and we're on different hair journeys. Nutrafol makes building a hair growth routine super easy. Purchase online, no prescription required. You get free shipping and automatic deliveries so that you never miss a day. And you'll see results in 3 to 6 months. So take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Give Them Lala listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code Lala. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com. Spelled NUTRAFOL.com. Promo code Lala. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Lala.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
We are back. I really loved hearing your guys' little story of how you came to be and about you guys being in the... Well,
the odds of us being friends for this long and working together for this long is...
We're old.
I mean, how many people do you know that have been friends and working together
since they were 16?
30 something years.
35 years.
Three of my best friends I've known for...
Not 35 years, because you're only
31. Well, I'm not 35, so...
No, but I mean,
but also working
you're
in
a
the
baby.
Same field.
You know. We've been working together for 2 decades.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's very sweet. And, you know, I'm going to be honest. I know both of you, and neither of you are super easy to deal with. So the fact that you...
I am a cakewalk. I resent that.
I'm just saying. Yeah. No, I wouldn't be able to say it.
Cool. So I'm going to throw you something at you, because I just want to know in terms of... Because, I mean, you do your... character, I guess. I don't know if it's... I'm not a big reality show person, so I don't watch the shows and I don't watch the show, but I know that Randy was a huge fan of Vanderpump forever, and I know that you are amazing in it and everybody loves you. Is it a persona or is it you, or what's the deal there?
I love that question, because a lot of people do think like you this has to be scripted, because no one in their right frame of mind would act this way. I think the difference between being on this show, there's...
Like versus acting in the roles
versus,
that you play.
Right. Acting, you know, you hand me a script and I get to be very creative with it.
And you spend a lot of time prepping to be that
person. Of course, I go to a coach. Yeah. But when I step onto Vanderpump Rules and I'm being myself, you know, the only difficult part is you don't get to say this isn't the right time or place, you know, because... That's what we do. We feel all of our feelings and we express them. So there's no gray area. You're black or you're white. And that, it's so crazy, because my mom always told me as a child, like, please find the gray area in life. I was always very intense. It was always one way or another, and it couldn't be in between. And who knew that that would make a reality TV personality? You know, it's like, if I am feeling it and thinking it, then I say it. And... Sometimes
no, it's you. It's you.
And it, apparently it works.
Listen, when I see you, because I know I'm sometimes around while you're filming, you know, nothing changes. I mean, you guys are who you are. I know you guys while the camera's rolling. I know you guys when we're on vacation.
Right.
It is who you guys are. Nothing is different. The only thing that happens is you guys are confronting and dealing with your inner friendships right there, and the world gets right to watch. But
I mean, imagine it's harder doing what you do than being on a screen, or, you know, acting, where you get to just jump out and be anybody. I mean, you have to be vulnerable, and I mean, you're on the show now too. So I mean, what does it feel like when you're just...
Oh, well, for me, it's never going to be... It's for her. It's amazing. Sometimes I sit there, we joke about it, Lala and I, like, I'll be sitting at a dinner table while they're filming and they're having like these conversations or these intense conversations. And I feel like I'm sitting on my couch watching the show, because I'm never going to be comfortable with a camera pointed at me. It's not what I do.
No, you're a behind the scenes guy. Right, you're right. Never going to feel comfortable never. About opening up.
It's just not my thing. I
respect that.
But watching them, it's like they don't even know the cameras are there. They are just themselves, whether they are getting along or not getting along. And I that's why I say, like, to do what they do and be who they really are, they're the real selves. They're not... When the cameras start rolling, you would think like, oh, they're going to put on a show now. It's like I'm sitting there watching. They are exactly
who
they are.
It just organically happens. And the thing is with this group is...
And they are friends. You got, the other thing I want to say, Mike, that most people don't know, and I'm sorry to cut you off. The thing that people don't know is this group, they are really friends. I met Lala, you know, years and years ago, and I've known every one of these people that are on this show from the day I met you, Loss. I mean, they've been in your
it's
life.
It's a real group.
Yeah, whether the cameras are rolling or they're vacationing with no cameras, they are true friends, this group, you know.
Yeah, And there are times where we have drama and I'm like, God, wouldn't Vanderpump love to catch this right now? You know, right, like right. it never changes. But it's almost like the ultimate therapy because you're constantly spewing your feelings. And at the end of the day, we make each other better. And other times we come to the understanding where it's like, we're going to disagree on this. And is it going to end a friendship? Or do we just like own that's who this person is, this is who I am, and we're going to move on and just embrace the fact that we disagree on this. You know, it's like, I feel like I have therapy, yeah. Especially and in our interviews.
Do you, I mean, if you have a problem watching yourself in films, do you watch yourself on the
they
show?
They have to.
We have to because then we go into a reunion where we have to talk about all of our behavior and things like that.
Right.
So they therefore, like it's part, they have to watch each episode.
But are you as critical of yourself when you watch it, when you watch yourself being yourself, then, or is it different?
No, I think you're less critical about
I'm
the show.
I'm way less critical.
Because that's who you are.
Right. It's like, for me, doing Vanderpump, it's not an, I wouldn't say it's an art, you know? Mm. Like when I go and I film a movie, you know, I really incubate that character and try to take it on as my own. And if I feel like that's going to be judged as it not being good enough, I take it more personally, I guess, because yeah. I also feel like I let the role down. Whereas like if on TV, if someone's judging me, it's like, fuck you, this is me, like take it or leave it, I don't care.
Yeah, you but I think that's easier. Like if you're on a reality show like you are, people are judging, they're judging who you are as a person. You exactly. know who you are. You know you're a good
I don't know
person.
Why that's easier for me to digest. It's easier for me to digest them coming for me as a human rather than them coming for like a character I'm putting on.
I don't think you could do the job. Like that's why like when people like I don't think you can be in the position you're in and be so like by a comment, you know, shook, as you say.
Right.
Like I think it would be hard to do what you do, and I think you guys have to build up a certain kind of tolerance for people, you know, coming at for you on reality. Whereas in a movie, you work hard to inhibit a role and interpret a role, and then you put it out there, and then people say, "Oh, well, you didn't do a good job." That's hard because it's like your artistic work. You
correct.
Know? So as a reality star, you're being real. You're just being who you are. So I don't think you get as shaken.
No, you know, at all.
Well, I think you did a great job on the movie. And if you haven't seen Out of Death, go check it out. It's available on Amazon.
People
and watch
love it.
And watch Lala because she is really fun and amazing. And there's, you know, there's a lot. There's
I
a
had
lot
a lot
of
fun with
there.
That
yeah.
role.
Yeah. I'm proud of both of you guys. You guys both did a great job. And Mike's getting ready to go direct another movie in October.
I just signed my contract with
yes.
you.
Yes.
Off you go.
Off you go. Off you go.
Snaps. Snaps.
Thank you again. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay. So 40. Before we sign off, Mikey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And by the way, Mike Burns' Instagram is?
The Mike Burns.
There you go. Oh, follow him and check out his latest work.
Okay, so we have a few voicemails that I want to answer. I love voicemails.
Hi, Lala and Randall. It's Gabby and Erica from New Mexico, and we love your show. And our question is for Randall, and our question is, have you read Lala's entire book? We just wanted to know, and if you sat down and read it. We love you guys.
My answer is bye. No. I read what Lala wanted me to read. I think that was the safest move for me. When Lala was writing the book, I really, really respected the fact that she's going to be a first-time author. And when she came to me and said, I'm going to write a book on myself, on my life. And, you know, I was very supportive. And I said, is it, I wanted to kind of let her have her moment. I felt like if I read it while she was writing it and the drafts that she had, I might, you know, get a little shook.
Yeah.
We talked about me reading the one chapter. There was one particular chapter. I don't even, but there was one chapter I did read and I just said, okay, you know, it's your voice. It's your world. And I think one of the things about our relationship that we've always thrived on is we support one another in everything we do. And I definitely support her in this book. Are there things in the book that, that I would have preferred she maybe left out? Sure. I mean, I definitely don't think toothbrushes are necessary in the book.
So can I chime in on that real quick? Because that was a big headline. It's spoken about a lot, especially in the show. And I'm going to say this without getting emotional. the reason I chose to put things like that in the book are because, you know, I was really struggling with addiction. And there were people when I said that I came out as an alcoholic that really looked at me like, why? I don't get it. And it was important for me to show the behavior that I would display and things that I would do when I was drinking.
Right.
So even though it made for an entertaining headline, it made for an entertaining story in the book, it went way beyond that.
Yeah.
It was like, these are the things that I'm mortified about that I would do when I would drink. Sorry. So.
It's okay. I love you. Yeah, I mean, it was a dark time, you know. It was a dark time, and, you know, life's not always what it's supposed to be, you know. You know, I mean, people don't know all the details, but you, you know, you struggle with addiction, and then your father passed away, and then it, you know, got dark. So I'm very proud of you and who you are today. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I think for me, the best thing was just to support whatever you put out, because it was your words, your voice. And I know behind what all that, why you were trying to share that stuff. You know, unfortunately, people in headlines want things to, you know,
they want what's interesting to click on.
Correct.
How many people can we get to read what I've just written? And so I respect the hustle and the game.
Right.
But it is important for me to tell you and everyone else that wasn't just so that it would make a funny headline. This was a real life sickness that I'm still battling every day. It will never be cured. And it's important for me to be a sober human being because I pulled some stupid shit. There we go.
Yeah. And you know what? That's life. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, I didn't read the book, but I read things Lala wanted me to read. And that's kind of
after it was published, because I wasn't tweaking anything. I like this next question.
Hi, Lala and Randall. My name is Lauren. I live in the New York area. I am a huge fan. You guys are killing it. I wanted to ask a question regarding relationships. I've been with my fiance now for 10 years. We started dating freshman year of college. And throughout the pandemic, one thing that we've really been working on is how to fight. All couples are going to fight, but eventually, you know, you have to learn to fight the right way for you, for your partner, and how everybody communicates differently. So was wondering what you both would say your biggest tip for couples would be regarding communication, regarding, you know, what you've learned in terms of what is the best way to fight, like all couples do. So keep up the great work. So happy for you both for all the changes this year, and wishing you all the best. Thanks.
The second I like heard this voicemail, I was like, I don't even think I know the answer, but that's like such a great question to ask.
But I think that even, you know, we've been together a long time now, I think, or not a long time, but we've been together a decent amount of time. I think it's communication is constantly evolving. It's like that you always have to be kind of evolving. And when the communication is breaking down between, you know, a couple, you have to kind of work on that. You have to say, okay, what can I do to, you know, be heard the right way, you know? And same with you, you know, you'll say to me, I need to be heard. And then I have to figure out, you know, you have to figure out a way to have that conversation with me and vice versa. So I think that my only advice for people is, you have to really have patience, mm-hmm. lots of patience, and you have to, you know, you have to be willing to put the work in, you know, and I think that, I think the easy answer sometimes is, you know, it's just not working and fuck it. Right. You know, that's what we do as human beings.
I think the biggest thing as well for couples is to not shove things under the rug, because then a blow up happens and there's so much that's, you know, been pushed aside that you don't even know the root of the problem anymore.
Yeah.
And I still think Randall and I are figuring out how to argue with each other and how to hear each other correctly, because we are both the type of people to, the second that there's, you know, we're feeling like the other one is attacking, the wall goes up and that person immediately becomes the opponent.
Right.
And that's a difficult pattern to break. And I think, because you and I are like any other couple in the world, mm-hmm. where you hit walls sometimes, like relationships.
That's relationships.
That's what I'm saying.
And my parents have been together.
It's a lot of work.
Right.
So the person you're with, you have to be willing to say, I'm going to fight through everything to make this work.
Well, like my parents have been together 50 years and I take my hat off to both of them. And your parents were together for how many years? 20, 30, 30?
No, they were approaching their 40.
40.
Their, yeah.
Right. Okay. When your father passed away. So a long time. So, and you know, one thing I take away from them always is you will hit walls in your relationship, whether you've been together 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 40 years. But the thing is how you deal with it and how you try to communicate and change the communication. Like when you and I feel like we're not communicating, or, you know, or there are things, you know, bothering me or bothering you, we have to have that talk. And right. I think a lot of couples don't want to have that talk, and that talk isn't always comfortable.
I would say that the biggest thing that we've practiced, and I would give this advice to anybody, is for you and your partner to come up with a safe word. Because in the heat of the moment, you're not thinking and you're only feeling. So it's once you feel like, okay, I'm in this state of mind where I just want to attack, or I don't want to hear what my partner is saying, you drop the safe word. You both allow yourselves to quiet.
Like a timeout.
It's the timeout.
Yeah. And by the way, we don't have it figured out and we're not experts, you know, but at the same time, I feel like at the end of the day, you just, like, I think the general consensus, because we're not experts on this topic by any means, I think you constantly have to evolve. And when you're hitting walls and things are not going the way you'd like them to go, because sometimes they're not going well for both of you, and sometimes they're not going well for one person. You know, sometimes one person's struggling more than the other, et cetera. So I just think you gotta figure out a way to talk to each other and be heard. And yeah. in a way that your partner doesn't feel attacked.
It's so much easier said than done. Oh. I mean, perspective is a real bitch.
Perspective is a motherfucker.
It really is. It's like the one thing that I sit here and I'm like, God, we all just see the world so differently. You know?
Yeah, it's not. Listen, we do the work, and we're always doing the work. And some months it's super smooth sailing. Some years super smooth sailing, and some are more difficult. But at the end of the day, you just got to keep talking.
But it sounds like they've been together 10 years. Like they're ride or die for each other.
Yeah. And by the way, I think at the end of the day, you got to figure out a way to communicate.
We love saying at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, I'm going to end this podcast.
It should be called the End of the Day Podcast.
That's my next podcast. That's the spinoff of this podcast.
I love it.
End of the day. Anyway, that was a really good question. I like that question. Just because it's nice to see people who've been together a decade who, you know, want to
still are trying to figure it out, yeah. Just like we all are.
But my parents too, and I even remember to having conversations with your dad. My parents, you know, are together now 50 years, and
yeah.
They have days where they're just like, I go, how's my dad doing? I'm not talking to him. Well, wait, it's been 50 fucking years. What are you talking about? He doesn't deserve it today. I cook pasta and the pasta, it's not all about the pasta, but he didn't say it was al dente enough. And I'm like, is this for real?
It is.
You guys
for real.
Are 50 fucking years together.
I know.
But that's, you know, that's the same shit. And I remember talking, I used to go to your dad for advice about you.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, these two women, you know, you know, Lisa and you. He's like, sometimes you just gotta, just let it go. Just let them roll. And I was like, that's your advice, Ken? And he's like, yeah. I was like, okay, and by the way, my dad used to allow me
and my mom to just tire ourselves out.
That's what Kent used to try to tell me, but it was so new. It was like 3 months in, and I'd be like, Kent, that's not the fucking advice I was looking for. He's like, you'll learn.
And you have.
Yeah, now I just quit. I just quit the fight. I just like, okay, you win. It's too exhausting.
I dig it.
Anyway.
Those were epic voicemails. I'm happy about it. Remember, you guys can call in, leave us a voicemail. We'll answer your questions. Just dial 1-866-LALA-POD. This was fun.
Well, I thank Mike Burns for being on here. And of course, I thank you, Lala Kent, for being a great co-host.
And I thank you for being the With Randall to my Give Them Lala. Thank you guys for listening.
What a fucking ego fucking maniac.
I love you. And I love you guys as well. Thank you for tuning into another episode of Give Them Lala with Randall. And we will catch you next week.
Oh my God, Lala, I love you so much. This is so exciting that I can call and leave a comment and you can hear it. Maybe you'll share it. Anyways, I'm just really happy for you and Randall, for your new baby Ocean. She's gorgeous. You're doing great as the new mommy. And can't wait to see you on the show here soon. Hope all is well and keep doing what you're doing. You're killing it, girl. Love you, Lala.
Thank you so much, my loves, to everyone who has already called in to leave us messages. Please keep them coming because we love hearing from you. Call us anytime at 866-LALA-POD. That is 866-LALA-POD. I mother effing love you.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.